Morning, call to order the House Committee on Environment and Water. Thank you, members, for your patience. There was an accident on I-5 South, and so folks coming from the Portland area were stuck in that, including me. But we have a, I think, relatively short agenda and should be out well before 10 o'clock. Let's open a work session on House Bill 3602. And Martha, do you want to walk us through the Dash 3 amendments?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Martha Pagel. I'm an attorney representing Umatilla County. The county had requested this bill, and after your first hearing, we've been working with a work group of interested parties to develop amendments that are reflected here in the Dash 3 amendments that you have before you. This is pretty much an overhaul of the bill from where it started, but to walk you through it in a brief fashion, and then I can take any questions and give any more details that you'd like. In the first section is intended to override the statutory provision that would terminate the license upon the county acquiring this property as a result of foreclosure. So that was the main objective for the county, to be able to override that statutory provision. So this does that. And it very much limits it to Umatilla County and to this particular project. We're not aware of any other project in the state that it would apply to. That was one of the issues that was important to other work group members. I should point out that our work group included the Umatilla Tribes, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Water Resources Department, Water Watch, the couple who have proposed to purchase the project from the county and the county. And I just really want to express the county's appreciation to the effort that the work group members put in on this. It's a really constructive and productive process. The one thing that I would flag in the section one, which is basically lines 5 through 13, is that it is the county's position that legally what they have acquired in this project is the property as a result of tax foreclosure, and that they do not currently own the license or the water right that goes along with it. The language that you see here in the bill reflects current wording in the statute, and we're in the process of clarifying that with legislative counsel to make sure that there's no unintended consequence here that suggests that the county actually owns the license right now. But I'm working on that, and I don't think that a change will be needed, but we just want to flag that as a possible further tweaking that might occur on the Senate side. In Section 2, that's intended to express conditions that have to occur to make sure that this license can continue. And one condition is that the county needs to transfer it to a new owner, and that has to occur within 2 years after the date that the county acquired it, and that the new owners then need to agree to these additional conditions that are provided in Section 3.
This is subsection 2.
Subsection 3, I'm sorry, yes. Yeah. Subsection 3, which begins on page 2, is the meat of the new conditions that our work group discussed, and I'll walk you through it. The first one, subsection A, makes the water right and the hydroelectric project subordinate to an existing in-stream water right. That was a concern expressed by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Water Watch, the tribes, and others. Subsections B, C, and D deal with questions that came up about the adequacy of the existing provisions of the project for fish screening and fish passage. And to summarize, what these sections do is require the new owners to develop an implementation plan to bring the project facilities up to the standards required by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And they do that in a consultation. But initially, informally, they will be consulting with the tribes and Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, as well as NOAA Fisheries has been invited to participate in a meeting that's actually going to happen next week. But at any rate, they will, after getting this kind of input, they will develop a plan, present it to the Department of Fish and Wildlife for approval. ODFW will consult with the tribes, If the plan is approved, then it will be incorporated into the hydroelectric license and the water right that goes along with it as a condition. It includes upgrading the fish screening and fish passage. It allows the project to operate on an interim basis so long as they comply with any specific repairs or modifications that are needed to what we call interim measures to bring it up to a certain level of performance before they begin operating. It requires a temporary shutdown if the project results in significant fish kills or delays in passage, and then they go through a process of figuring out what's wrong and fixing it and then starting up again. And it gives them up to 4 years to fully implement the requirements, so that gives them some time to build up some revenue from operating the project and seek out other funding to help them improve, install the long-term fix there. Subsection 4, which begins on page 3, deals with a provision in the state license and water right that called for an automatic termination after non-use of 5 years. This provides kind of a grace period under certain conditions so that that won't result in a termination of the license. Then we include also a sunset provision and an emergency clause.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate your work on this and the work of other members of the work group, as well as legislative council that put together this draft on very short notice and did a great job. I would take a motion on the dash 3. We are in a work session. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think first motion is to amend the bill with the dash 3 amendments dated today.
Yeah.
Today, February 11, 2010.
Yeah, I think they're actually the 10th. They're dated the 10th.
Dated February 10, 2010.
Representative Jensen moves the dash 3 amendments dated February 10th, 2010. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
I move that we pass with a send to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. House Bill 3602 as amended.
Great. Representative Jensen moves House Bill 3602 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation as amended. We do have statements from fiscal and revenue, no fiscal impact nor revenue impact of this bill, so we have our paperwork in order. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Bent?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. And the motion carries. Representative Jensen, will you carry that on the floor?
Thank you.
So one down, and let's next open a, or close the work session on House Bill 3602 and open a work session on House Bill 3693. And we have seen the dash, they were the dash ones, right?
Right.
It'll take me a minute to pull this up here, but there have been no changes on this bill since we looked at it, no proposed changes since we looked at it last on Tuesday. Do you have the amendment?
Mm-hmm.
I think the amendment is in the same here. Thank you. This bill, members, will allow for blending of biodiesel during certain months next winter. The whole provision is repealed at the end of the winter. Of course, the legislature could act next year if necessary. But this is a sort of one winter opportunity to allow our fuel distributors and fuel users particularly those who are exposed to extremely cold weather, to make fuel work, including fuel that has biodiesel in it. Is there? I guess we need a motion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen?
I would move the Dash 1 amendment dated February 8th, 2010 to House Bill 3693.
Representative Jensen moves the Dash 1 amendments dated February 8th, 2010 to House Bill 3693. Is there discussion?
Just a quick question.
Yeah, Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you. The way I read the bill, Sections 5 and 6 are the repeal in March next year. Did I read that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yep. That's what takes this from a one-page bill to a
multi-page.
That's okay.
Three-page bill.
Yeah.
It's just the repeal.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the Dash 1? Seeing none, is there any objection? There is none. The Dash 1s are amended into House Bill 3693. Representative Jensen.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3693 to the floor with a due pass recommend. House Bill 3693 as amended. To the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Jensen moves House Bill 3693 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this bill as amended is a reasonable step in addressing what we are investigating, and in terms of the gelling problem, I think it's appropriate that we take a year to look at whether or not adding these additives or different blending methods may or may not impact the issue in these cold weather climates. That said, I strongly appreciate the support that has been put on the record for the RFS and for the biodiesel standard. Appreciate the fact that the trucking industry has said that they are not opposed to continuing with the program, if I remember their testimony correctly, and I strongly support having a biodiesel, the 2% biodiesel component. I think it's good for Oregon's economy, good for jobs here, and good for the environment. So look forward to continuing that program and using this bill as a way to assess whether or not we can implement it better in places that experience severe cold weather.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Bailey. Any further discussion? I would add that it became clear as we explored this issue that the underlying problem, if there is one, with gelling, and I think there is some evidence that there was problem in that cold weather, relates not to the biodiesel component of the bill, and I think it's of the fuel, and I think it's really important to remember that it does the problem resulted from the fact that there were some users who were concerned that they would violate the standard by blending that diesel with kerosene, number one diesel, the way they're accustomed to doing with the conventional diesel that they've been using for years, and I appreciate that concern, given the law says you have to run 2% biodiesel, but the gelling problem itself is not the result of a 2% biodiesel. I am glad that there is a way to provide some flexibility in the coming winter while we experiment and learn what it will take to make sure this works going forward. I am quite confident that we can make it work. If Minnesota can do it with 5% or even 10% biodiesel blends, then I know that we can do it here with 2%. So we'll use this coming winter to experiment and learn and move forward successfully, I expect. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the support for this bill. It's greatly appreciated, and the only thing I would ask, I don't know if anything that we've done requires a report back on the variable costs that the standard is going to impose upon different parts of Oregon, because it sure has become apparent that certain parts of Oregon are going to be paying more for their diesel fuel than others, and it would be, I think, worthwhile for us to know how these efforts to try to improve our economy and at the same time meet these standards impact folks differently. It would be hugely interesting, I think. And I don't remember if we're going to have a report back or what, but if we haven't asked for that, we should.
I don't recall under the existing legislation whether there is a reporting requirement on that subject. I'm seeing head shakes no, but it is clearly a topic that we could take up in this committee during the interim. Any further discussion? The motion is to move 3693 as amended to the floor. And Sue, would you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Fenn?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. 3693 goes to the floor. Representative Jensen, would you carry this bill?
Aye.
Yeah, thank you. And let's close the work session on 3693, open a work session on House Bill 3701. And this is a technical bill that just nudges the boundaries on steep slope and identified species burning within the state's remaining field burning program. We had testimony on the bill on Tuesday, have no amendments, is that right? We're moving we're looking at the original version of the bill, and I would take a motion on House Bill 3701.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3701 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Jensen moves House Bill 3701 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Boone.
I just wanted to reiterate, too, I will be supporting this bill. I think this comes down to it's a fairness issue. Particular pieces of property in that area were located after we closed discussion on the field burning ban, and it's only right to include them if they meet the parameters of the bill, which they do.
Thank you, Representative Boone. I concur. Other discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been puzzling about how to say what I need to say about this bill. Upper Willamette Valley is a very sensitive airshed, and the smoke tends to move around in ways that nobody intended. The area that we're talking about is close to my district. The first complaints that we received in 2006 about field burning actually came from the area of my district that's in Linn County, not from Eugene. And I consider this to be a serious issue when we're talking about burning 15,000 acres in a summer. While it's a significant improvement over what we used to do, I'm not sure it's adequate. I'm not certain how I'm going to vote on the floor, but I'm going to vote no this morning.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Any further discussion? Seeing none, let me just add, I my understanding of this bill is that it really does adjust these boundaries consistent with the intent and the agreement that we had in 2009 related to the ban, and the few acres affected, a couple of hundred acres affected, really were incorrectly categorized under the original bill. I'm confident that this is in keeping with the spirit of the ban that we passed in 2009, and I'm therefore prepared to support it. Sue, would you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Fenn?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. And the bill goes to the floor. Representative Thompson, would you carry?
I would be honored. This?
Thank you. Representative Thompson will carry it on the floor. Thank you, members. Close the work session on House Bill 3701 and open a work session on House Bill 3606. Reluctantly. We have... What do we have? Dash twos. I remain slower on the computer here than with the files, so it will take me a moment to call them up. I hope I have them.
and I don't have one.
Do we have any more, sir? Do we have any more? Oh, the dash two.
Let's scan these for just a moment while we make sure the committee has the dash twos in front of them. Come back in the session. The dash two amendments are from yesterday, so it may be worth taking a moment. They reflect, and I'm looking to the audience for confirmation of this, they reflect the feedback that the department and Justin provided to Legislative Council, changing just a few words, I think, from the dash ones that we saw previously. Can you, Palmer or Loretta or Justin, can you just tell us how exactly they modified the dash ones that we looked at on Tuesday?
Good morning, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. My name is Palmer Mason. I'm with the Department of Environmental Quality. The difference between, if I may, Chair Cannon, it may be easier to explain the difference between the bill and the amendment. So the difference between the dash two amendment and the bill are very slight. In the first section there, section one, under what is 459A, 340, subsection 3B, we were discussing with council to ensure that we had that worded right, that we referenced the right manufacturers and the right calendar years for purposes of doing the determinations for return share for TV manufacturers. So that was just to clarify that. The next section, or subsection, is the C, the little letter C. That's really the operative part here. This is what we've been talking about, where we set it up so for TV manufacturers, after the initial allocation is done of return share, it's further allocated by market share, which is, again, the whole purpose of this particular amendment was to turn all TV manufacturer assignments of their responsibilities over to market share. So that's what that section does there. And that wording is actually very close to what is in the bill, except for we broke out that capital A you see there on page 2. And we now have it so the department may use national market data, retail, manufacturer data, consumer research, and other data. That was a slightly expanded version of the data that we were looking at under the bill as it was drafted earlier. And again, the idea here is that when we actually make the assignments for the TV manufacturers, it'll initially be based on the tonnage that came in that's associated with that manufacturer and their brands, and then further allocated by market share. And the market share data will be driven by the sales under the prior calendar year. But it was important to have some other data, the consumer data, other national data, to help verify that sales data was accurate. And I'm probably not saying that very well, but the assignment itself will be based on what was sold. But to help know that we're looking at a good number, you use other data, if that makes sense. That was the basic gist of that. So that was, and then we further broke that out under the amendment to a capital B, where we now have this surcharge. It's a discretionary. It's not intended to absolutely levy on the TV manufacturer, but we may do so to cover the additional work associated with this. I mean, as we explained in earlier testimony, we use market share, but it's much more limited. It's just under the current law for the fees that are paid in the state contractor program. Now we're talking about using market share to set the assignments for all TV manufacturers. It's a bigger task, so there may be additional costs associated with that. That's why that is different. Then if you go over to page four, you'll see there where we are taking out language under the current law if this amendment were to pass, and that is to deal with, this is the portion under the state contractor program where the fees are set, and those fees under the current law are based on market share. So that no longer applies since we're going to use market share all the way through. So that's what's going on in that particular section, and I think the wording may be slightly different than what was in the bill originally. And then you get to sections two, and there's just a slight change in the date from the bill. I mean, this is very minor. It says there at the end of line three on page five, calendar years beginning 2010, whereas the bill said for calendar years 2010 and beyond. I'm honestly, I'm not really sure why that's that much different, but it is. And then the rest of the amendment is basically like the bill.
Thank you, Palmer. We have a fiscal statement on this as well, and let me just make sure I understand what this will mean for the costs to the state and costs to manufacturers. Assuming that manufacturers chose to stay in the same program that they're in today, and they may not, but assuming that they did, for purposes of simplicity, this would have the practical effect that the state would charge, would assess lower fees to participants in the state program. Is that correct, generally? Is that correct?
Do you want to answer that?
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, yes. The fees might be the same in terms of, might be 31 cents a pound, but we would be collecting less.
Well, would you identify yourself? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm Loretta Pickerell. I'm a manager of solid waste at DEQ. The fee itself might be 31 cents a pound, so that the fee itself might remain the same, but since we would be collecting less in the state contractor program, we would have less cost to allocate among the manufacturers.
Right. So whereas a manufacturer today in the state program is responsible for, you know, its share of a, you know, say a million pounds per year, and that's going to result in a, you know, fee of whatever, in the coming year, if this was to pass, that manufacturer would be responsible for much less than a million, its share of much less than a million pounds. Again, assuming that there isn't shifting, manufacturers don't choose to leave the independent programs and join the state, which also may happen, and that's reflected in the fiscal statement that we've got. But so it is the case that the state program, again, assuming things are static, the state program becomes less expensive to operate, and fees for participants in aggregate will reduce.
Again, that's correct. I should add one note, just full disclosure. If we have fewer pounds coming in with the same amount of fixed cost, that 31 cents a pound may not change, but it may. We haven't figured that out yet. So there may be a slight bit of same overhead spread among fewer pounds.
Yep.
But yes, other than that, what you said is correct.
Yep. Any additional questions for the department? Note again that we do have a fiscal statement on this. It you know, is clouded in quite a bit of uncertainty about what this will mean practically, but is consistent with what we've heard today from the state standpoint. You'll actually have an other funds expenditure limitation that gives you a lot of more ceiling, perhaps, than is necessary. We've asked for legislative fiscal whether this needs to go to Ways and Means. They've said it does not. seems clear to me, at least, that if it has any impact on state other funds spending, it will be to reduce what the state spends on this program. Any additional questions? Okay, thank you very much for your work on this. I would have been, you know, as a personal matter, been quite happy to see this all move to return share. That's where I was in 2007. It would be significantly simpler. We would have a, you know, we'd have different manufacturers, I suspect, supporting and opposing the bill when we flip them. But this is certainly one way of dealing with the, I think, the unintended consequences of a not entirely correctly drafted bill in 2007. We should get a motion on the dash twos and then see what kind of discussion there is on this bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the dash two amendments to House Bill 3606, dash two amendments dated February 10, 2010.
Representative Jensen moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 3606, dated 2010. Is there discussion? Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not completely clear to me what we're changing, what this movement is. Can someone explain to me what we're actually doing with this thing?
Yes. I'll take a stab at it, and then Paul Renner, Justin, you come back up here. I mean, it essentially the first step for a manufacturer under this e-cycles program, for a television manufacturer, is to decide whether they're going to participate in a state program or participate in an independent program. And that, so they make that choice, and they carry with them a certain number of pounds of responsibility for collection to that program. And this bill is about how many pounds of responsibility they carry to that program, please correct me if I'm wrong. And it says that they will carry that pound responsibility will be based on their market share, not actually how many came back through the program. The total is based on how many came through the program the previous year, but how many that manufacturer carries over to their program depends on how many they sold in the previous year. And the reason we moved to this for television manufacturers was the concern that we heard expressed that a TV manufacturer who 25 years ago was selling lots of TVs but today is selling very few should not be on the hook for the lion's share of the cost of a program, because that television manufacturer today may barely exist, may not sell TVs, may have a different line of business altogether. So the notion behind this bill is to consistently apply that market share principle to television manufacturers.
So let me restate it and see if I understand it. What I think you said was that there is a certain amount of return that's coming in. We know approximately what that is. And some of it will go to independent programs, some of it will go to state program. The share any particular business will have to bear of that is dependent upon its share of the market as it exists now, rather than the names on the machines that are coming back.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Let me make a comment then, if I may, now that I understand the bill. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great way to do it from a theoretical point of view, simply because if someone is buying a TV set, doesn't own one now, nothing goes into the stream, into the recycling stream. If someone currently owns a TV set and disposes of it because it is now obsolete or they don't need it anymore, and there's no value to selling it to someone who's going to use it, it can reasonably be considered a cost that should be included in the cost, in the price of the new set that they're purchasing, because it's one of the things that happens as a result of that purchase. It simply becomes an internalized rather than an externalized cost for that purpose.
And then, of course, you get the practical issue that you referred to, in that you may have an allocation, if you did it the other way, to a company that doesn't exist anymore, and someone else would have to bear the price. But I think from a practical point of view, it makes a lot of sense to do it, to allocate the cost this way, because it can very reasonably be thought, seems to me, that one of the part of the price of a new TV is the cost of disposing of the old one.
Right. Exactly, and that's the premise of this bill. It's interesting to note that we chose in 2007 to deal with IT, that is computers, differently, and that was a consensus sort of agreement among the IT manufacturers that they would in fact pay based on, or have an obligation in the program based on, how much of their material was returned the previous year. So it has nothing to do with market share, and we don't go out and collect market share data for the manufacturers who are identified as primarily computer manufacturers, Hewlett Packard and Apple and so on. And this bill does nothing to impact that. So, but for televisions, different situation, and we chose to go with market share, and this bill would ensure consistency with that decision in 2007. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I understand correctly, this is the Nobody's Purchased a Zenith Recently Act. I guess just as a general comment, not necessarily specific to this bill, although it does apply to this bill, I think it would have been helpful, given that there is clearly a formula that is being used in calculating costs and shares of costs, to have seen a formula and how formula A is different than formula B, and what the decision points between those formulas are. And we've had a lot of testimony and a lot of talk on this bill that I think explains the principle behind it, but in the future it would be nice to be able to see from the department those figures.
Yes, and I think as this, if this moves to the Senate, strongly encourage you to just lay it out there, and as sort of graphically as possible, and with some dollars and cents and a formula behind it, recognizing that we're all dealing with projections with assumptions, but I think that will be very helpful to members of whatever committee over there ends up dealing with this. Any further? I guess we think we need a motion. We've got a motion. We've got a motion on 3606. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Sue, will you call the roll?
Well, you're on the dash two.
Sorry, that was on the dash two. Mm-hmm. Is there any objection to the dash two? There is none. Dash twos are amended into the bill. Is there a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
I move House Bill 3606 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Jensen moves House Bill 3606 as amended by the dash twos to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? And Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Bent?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. 3606 goes to the floor. I'll carry it. Thank you, committee. Well done. Another efficient meeting. And let the record note that the only no vote on the House bills came from Representative Barnhart. The only no vote this entire session on House bills in this committee came from Representative Barnhart. It's
clearly a right-wing committee, sir.
Representative Jensen.
The representative changed parties, or is there any reason that we can...
No, our chair has.
No. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The problem, of course, here is one of those utterly insolvable ones, in that you mentioned, I think off the record before we began, that we had a record going, and it becomes an absolutely irresistible impulse.
I realized my mistake as soon as I opened my mouth with that comment. Thank you, members. We'll take up Senate bills next week. We will close the session and close the committee.